This is Crossroads with Terry Mattingly, a Rational Sheep podcast.
A big story and a headline in the New York Times. IRS says churches can endorse candidates from the pulpit. In a court filing, the tax agency said a decades-old ban on campaigning by tax-exempt groups should not apply to houses of worship speaking to their own members. Could it be a case of getting what you wished for? Greetings and welcome to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry is Senior Fellow on Communications and Culture at St. Constantine College in Houston, Texas. He writes Rational Sheep, a Substack newsletter on faith, family, and mass media. He's author of the National On Religion column for the Andrews McMeel Universal Syndicate, and for two decades he led the GetReligion.org website. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
So concerning this IRS ruling, isn't it a good question for journalists to ask if churches are going to start endorsing political candidates?
Well, it's not just a good question, it's an essential question. In fact, I would suggest, this may be the wildest thing I've said in a long time, I would suggest that any news consumer faced with a question on this issue, faced with a story on this issue, raising questions about it, I think they should read the story, and if it didn't give you examples of religious organizations endorsing candidates on both the left and the right in the past, I think you should just throw the story away. I mean, and the reason I say that is there are so many questions in that New York Times story. It's a short story. I was stunned that they didn't cite any examples of the controversies in the past, because there are all kinds of examples that you could cite that people on both left and right have called controversial. And this really is a case where people protest when somebody else does something that may as well be an endorsement, but they don't mind it when their own people do something that may as well be an endorsement. And the Johnson Amendment was something that we were discussing at Baylor 50 years ago when I was in the, maybe 45 years ago, when I was in the Church State Studies program. And one of the things we used to do was give examples of what churches on both the left and the right were already doing that functioned as endorsements. But let me just ask a couple of questions for our listeners to think about. Number one, it seems the IRS says it's okay for a church to speak to their church. Well, that doesn't make any sense. What they mean is, it okay for clergy to speak to their churches and endorse individual political candidates? Now, are they worried about that, or is there a distinction between speaking to your congregation from the pulpit? That seems to be what people have in mind. Is there a difference between that and a minister saying, my own congregation or my denomination or even my religious tradition endorses the following candidate, which is something completely different? You could tell the New York Times knows this distinction because it's at the very end of this story. Let me just read a paragraph or two. It basically tells churches of all denominations and sects that you're free to support candidates from the pulpit. And that's a quote from a professor at Notre Dame. It also says to all candidates and parties, hey, time to recruit some churches. Okay, let's pause for a second. In the last election, just to cite one example, did Kamala Harris have an organized committee of people doing outreach to evangelical people, churches, and organizations? She certainly did. Now, did Donald Trump have a committee that was in charge of outreach to evangelical people, ministers, churches, and organizations? And the answer there, of course, is of course. So what's different in this case? Well, there's a distinction between a minister saying, I'm making the following statement just for myself. It's, you know, my church can't endorse anyone. Well, now stop and think for a second. As divided as this country is right now, I don't expect there are any churches that are going to give surprising endorsements of candidates. I mean, if trying to deal with COVID regulations tore congregations apart, can you imagine a church that actually has diversity in its pews, diversity of any kind, is going to risk having someone stand in the pulpit and say, this is how you have to vote, or you're not a good Christian? So let me keep reading. A Loyola Law School professor says later, what if a church posts endorsements online? Communications meant for congregants could easily reach people unconnected to the church family. Quote, it's not going to be limited to just their membership. Even Las Vegas doesn't stay in Las Vegas these days. Everybody has a webpage. Okay, everybody has a webpage right now. And I can go to most churches' webpages and within three clicks tell you quite a bit about the cultural makeup of that congregation and how it is likely to stand on most political issues. But here's the interesting thing. How many times have you and I talked about the fact that it is one thing for churches to defend the doctrines of their faith, some of them 2,000 years old, go back to the Didache or something like that in the early church. They defend the doctrines of their church, and then they are accused of getting into politics, because the minute you say our church has the following beliefs on abortion, that is presumed to be endorsement of a particular political party, and especially if you print it up. And so let me some examples here that I wish they, I hope the future stories get into. First of all, what is a political endorsement? What does it mean to endorse someone? Is that standing in the pulpit and saying, I want you to vote for this candidate? Okay, well, what about an event where First Baptist Dallas, let's say, has a patriotic rally? And during this rally, Donald Trump comes out and does a speech. And at the end, the pastor says something like, well, y'all know we can't endorse former President Trump for this election, but we're all going to pray for him right now and ask for God's anointing on him. And they all stand around him and they put their hands on him and they pray for him. Now, is that a political endorsement? Is it a political endorsement when leaders in a lot of Latino, mainline Protestant, and some, I repeat, some African-American congregations did exactly the same sort of thing for Barack Obama or Joe Biden? Is the laying on of hands and praying for God to bless someone, is that a political endorsement? Because if it is an endorsement, we've had this going on for years. Just like labor unions are not supposed to endorse candidates. But when you have a convention and 10 labor leaders speak at one and they don't speak at the other, what does that tell you? I mean, at the Republican convention this year, I believe it was a Teamster leader delivered a major address that wasn't an endorsement of Trump, but it was an endorsement of some of the policies Trump was advocating. Well, did that violate the laws against a union endorsing a candidate? I could go on and on with this, but the simple fact of the matter, worship services, laying on of hands, asking God's blessing and favor on a candidate, doing public events to articulate your church's traditions on issues of marriage, family, life and death, euthanasia, abortion. Yes, immigration leaps to mind. and then handing out rating cards showing how specific politicians in both parties have voted on these issues. Are those endorsements? Well, if they are endorsements, we've had that going on for several decades now. So I think the real question from this story and the National Public Radio story as well, which is actually a story by the Religion News Service, what does this change? And what do the experts actually think will happen now that hasn't happened in the past? And are the experts willing to discuss what's been happening on the political left as well as on the right? That's my starting point in terms of questions for where we go now.
So how important is it in these stories that they note that this has been a long time rule, but largely unenforced? Some might even say in terms of expense, unenforceable. And as you've just pointed out, for all practical purposes, churches on both sides of the aisle have really been allowed to kind of do whatever they want, as long as they don't use the magic word endorse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, what's going to change? And I also, by the way, have a bit, I don't think these stories have bothered to stop and say, what's a church? I mean, are we talking about a local congregation? Well, what local congregations are a part of denominations that are going to allow them to do this? Can you picture the U.S. Catholic Bishops Conference endorsing a candidate? I cannot. Can you picture the Episcopal Church endorsing a candidate? Well, they haven't, but does anybody have any doubt where the hierarchy of the Episcopal Church stands, except the hierarchy of even one of the most culturally and doctrinally liberal churches in America knows that in the pews, their people are quite divided. Ryan Berg has put out some very interesting statistics that show that hardly any of the liberal mainline churches have numbers showing that they are primarily liberal in the pews. I believe the United Church of Christ and the Episcopal Church were the only ones in the last election that their people voted for Democrats more than they voted for Republicans. So when we say a church will endorse someone, are we talking about a non-denominational parachurch group? Can you expect Campus Crusade for Christ to endorse somebody? How about InterVarsity? How about Samaritan's Purse? Now, you've had Franklin Graham laying hands on Donald Trump and flying all over disaster zones with him and inviting Democrats, but everybody knows the Democrats probably won't show up because of how open Franklin Graham has been about his political views. But can you expect Samaritan's Purse as an organization to endorse specific candidates? Maybe because Franklin Graham shoots from the hip so openly. But stop and think about it. The real story here is not whether major denominations endorse candidates. It's whether these denominations that are in the free church polity, the Assemblies of God, the Southern Baptist Convention, and legions of non-denominational churches from coast to coast, whether or not those churches at the congregational level are going to fly the flag, maybe literally, of a specific candidate. That's the issue here. And maybe whether there would be some liberal churches that go just as far now that they have the freedom to do so. I'm just trying to picture what could change compared with what we have right now. And you have to think of that question before you can answer the question, what will change?
Terry, you say that the press has been inconsistent on churches endorsing political candidates. What do you mean?
Well, it's interesting, for example, when you get into the National Public Radio story, which is actually a Religion News Service story, and several veteran reporters are involved in this thing. When you get halfway down into this story, there's a subheadline that that says IRS rule led to costly investigations, comma, conservatives say. Now, that's interesting. I don't have any doubts whatsoever that's true. But here's the question. Has enforcement of the IRS rule led to costly investigations affecting any liberal churches? I would, if I'm going to talk about the conservative churches like First Baptist Dallas, talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars spent defending itself and its First Amendment rights, why can't you quickly come up with a quick search examples of liberal churches, large prominent liberal churches, facing the same sort of thing? Now, there have been some isolated cases of churches on the left getting in trouble for this, but everybody knows that when you read press coverage, this is supposedly about the religious right and it doing terrible things. And I would argue that what we have here in the press is another example of what we have frequently talked about being a good religion, bad religion situation. It's good religion when the good churches with the good beliefs do these kinds of activities that blur the line in terms of endorsing candidates. It's good religion when people pray for Bill Clinton and he has pastors come into the White House from major evangelical churches. It's good religion when there's a service to lay hands on Barack Obama and pray for God's favor on him. That's good religion. It's bad religion when bad churches with bad beliefs do the exact same activities for bad candidates. And so I think you could expect to see Fox News decline to ask questions about events happening in certain settings, while NPR declines to ask hard questions about suspicious activities happening in progressive settings in terms of religion. And once again, don't you get this feeling that there's nothing different here? To some degree, we're going to have the same media institutions reporting on the same stories that push the emotional buttons of their niche audience, readers, and viewers. So I'm really curious, what's going to happen that's different? I've always argued that churches shouldn't endorse candidates, but that they should do a better job of just explaining to their own people and to the public why they believe certain things. I mean, for example, I don't know if I've ever read a story in the New York Times or the Associated Press where anyone stopped and explained why the Catholic Church's teachings on immigration come out of the same moral and doctrinal tradition, the sanctity of human life, from conception to natural death, as the Church's positions on euthanasia and abortion. And I remember years ago when I was at the Rocky Mountain News, I put something like that in a story. It was about a conservative Episcopal church, what would later become an alternative Anglican church. And we thought it was news that the first church in the Denver area to create a hospice for people with AIDS was a conservative Anglican church that was very well known for its conservative stance on religious and moral issues. But it put together a bunch of donors and a bunch of volunteers and created a hospice for people with AIDS. My editors thought that was a great story. So I went and covered it, and I came back to the newsroom and I wrote my story, and I ended my story intentionally short of the amount of material the editors asked. They told me they wanted a 12-inch story, and I turned the story in deliberately at 11 inches. I didn't want to give them any reason to cut it. And the story ended with a quote in which the Anglican priest, who was the head of this hospice, said, we're doing this because God loves all people and wants all people to know that they're loved and that God cares about them. You know, no matter who they are, what they believe, whatever, God cares about you. And then he said the following: we're starting this hospice for the same reason that I was arrested last week in a demonstration outside of a clinic that does third trimester abortions. It's the same beliefs in both cases. We want to represent God's love to people at all stages of life. The story made it past my editor, and it went on. And I told my editor, you watch. The final paragraph of that story is not going to make it into print. And she said, Terry, don't be paranoid. I have already approved the story. I see the point you're making there. I may not agree with it, but I see your point, the point of the man you're interviewing, and it's relevant. Okay, I said, but watch. When the presses ran, that final paragraph was missing, and they had to resize the photograph with the story to fill the space left by the cut. And when we tried to find out what happened, the actual page of the paper in the printing press area is supposed to be initialed by someone, whoever approves the last thing to go out. Nobody had initialed that page. So we don't know who took that paragraph off. Now, that's a long story that isn't about the issue we're talking about. Or is it? In other words, if churches with nuanced, complicated views on moral and cultural issues actually manage to communicate them, do you expect those convictions to make it through the lens of the press and get out to the public? The exact people we need to hear from in this kind of a situation, the people who are not on the fringes of the left and right, are the exact people whose views I don't think will make it into print.
I understand that you have a strange analogy for what's actually happening here. Share that with us.
Well, this was something that happened years ago when I was at Baylor. And we were talking about the Johnson administration one day. And as we went around the table in this church-state seminar, we got discussing a different issue, which is that every year, the Christmas wars, and conservative groups fighting for the right to put some sort of creche on the lawn of City Hall, and that would be some sort of victory for the church and the gospel. Right next to Santa Claus and twinkling lights and whatever. In other words, the birth of our Savior is now equal to Santa Claus. Well, we were all sharing ideas, and I can't remember if it was me or someone else. We said, no, which would have the larger impact? A creche on the lawn of City Hall, or every single church in the city on the same night doing a live nativity scene in front of the church? Every church in the city, all of them that you can get. And they collect diapers and food and gifts for people in crisis pregnancies, people who are unemployed, people that are hungry, and you fill up the baskets with all these gifts as a part of your Christmas drive, and you stack those all up next to the nativity scenes in front of every church. Which of those two actions would lead to the greater impact on the community and make a louder statement in favor of Christmas? I would say, obviously, it's not one cheap little creche in front of the city hall where you go to complain about your taxes. The bigger statement is every church could get together and do that, or as many churches as possible. So I say that to say that in this case, post-Johnson amendment, I have no idea what churches should do to foster intelligent, nuanced discussion of political and social and moral and cultural issues that affect the life of the church. But I believe there's something they can do, and that it should involve as many churches as possible getting together to take part in it and do it. During the Black Lives Matter demonstrations, quietly, the demonstrations in which black churches and white churches met with police, knelt with them in the middle of streets, and prayed for the police, I think that those should have been covered just as much or more than the riots and the burnings and stuff that happened later that night. But were they covered as much or more? In fact, eventually they weren't covered at all.
With only a minute here, where does this go next? What's the necessary follow-up to all the stories that appeared about the IRS changing its policy?
Well, I'm sure that what I want to see happen is not going to happen. I would like to see a story that really gets in to what activities do lawyers now think churches can do, which is the question you have to ask before you get into discussions of what churches should do. And along the way, I think they need to note the many reasons that this rule will have no impact whatsoever on the largest and most important denominations in our land. It will primarily affect non-denominational churches and maybe a few very, very liberal churches in fading mainline bodies. So what can churches do and what should churches do? That's where I think they need to go to church-state experts and ask that question again.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow on Communications and Culture at St. Constantine College in Houston, Texas. He writes Rational Sheep, a Substack newsletter on faith, family, and mass media. He's author of the National On Religion column for the Andrews McNeil Universal Syndicate, and for 2 decades led the GetReligion.org website. Terry, thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you next week. Thanks for listening to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly.
You've been listening to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly, the Rational Sheep podcast. We'll be right back.